It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
What is going on, everyone? This is Mike Singer from Blue and Gold with this week's Mike Goolsby Show. Let's bring him in. Mr. Goolsby, how are you doing this week, man?
I'm good. I'm doing really good, Michael. Good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you. We got a great show lined up this week. I'm playing host. We have Mr. Goolsby, and we also have Mr. Tim Hyde. Tim, can you show the boat behind you for folks watching on YouTube? Because people always joke about how you're in a boat.
Yeah, the light's in the way, but I busted out the boat since everyone thinks I'm on a boat and Goolsby's in his little house. So that should be the name of the podcast, like once a month.
There you go. All right. Well, cool. Well, yeah, we're going to talk all things Notre Dame 41, Syracuse 24. Appreciate all you folks watching live with us, watching back, listen via podcast. However you're listening or however you're watching, I'll always appreciate that. Obviously a lot to discuss with this game and then looking ahead to, the Clemson matchup. It's a perfect time to have Tim and Goolsby on the show. So yeah, hit the thumbs up, subscribe to our channel. Of course, if you have not done so yet, if you have anything you want these two guys to answer, please do drop a super chat right away. And if you want even more Notre Dame football coverage, head over to blueandgold.com. It's just $10. For a new subscription through the start of next football season. So it is Mike Goolsby's show, so we will go to him first. Mike, what are your thoughts about this this win for the Irish?
It's nice to I think we tend to talk so much or lead in with offense. Quarterback play is probably has largely to do with that. But it's nice to get back to Tim having an identity, you know? It's like
yes.
This is who we wanted to be, but then we kind of changed our mind. We sort of F around, you know, we mix in some things, but yeah, it's nice to just get back to our bread and butter, the meat and potatoes, and pounding the ball. Anytime you've got a problem in life, gentlemen, I had a boss that told me this once, Rich Oberbeck, good man. He's like, anytime there's a problem, it's either A, a misunderstanding, B, there's a direct issue, or C, you can find a workaround. And it's like, Groupon's a problem. We're hopefully we don't spend a ton of time talking about this. I think Tim and I think alike here, but Groupon's a problem in terms of offensive execution, the limitations that he brings. So the workaround is just hammer the ball. And I think that's, you know, again, going back to week one against Ohio State, first half against Ohio State, that was the identity that we wanted to brand ourselves with. And it's come and gone. You know, it hasn't been a consistent identity on the offensive side of the ball. I still believe that Audric Estime is a star in the making. It's nice to see him not be relegated to the doghouse and just play a little bit of bully ball. So, not the most exciting games to watch, but it's reliable, and you can sleep at night knowing that we can at least do this. And the preseason forecast, Tim, was one of the strongest units, if not the strongest unit on the team, was going to be our offensive line. You got two potential first rounders on the edges. You've got a veteran in the middle there, and we leaned on them. And there's nothing wrong with that. So that's my takeaway.
Tim, do you remember how to speak, sir?
No, I'm on the Mike Goolsby show. I was letting him flow Tim, there. Yeah. So
yeah, Tim knows how I do it. I stop talking, then I forget something else. So yeah, man. But that's my thoughts. Okay. It's a nice – here I go again. See, Tim's right. But it's a nice road win. I think, Tim, when we beat BYU, were they not ranked 16th in the country?
16th. I think Clemson's 16 this coming week, so that'll be a good indicator for Notre Dame.
Yeah. No, so I wish they were, but it's exactly. Another, you know, Vegas was kind of a road win, sort of a neutral site, but we weren't in Notre Dame Stadium. So we knocked off two ranked opponents this year. We'll see what Syracuse looks like on the back half of their season, if they were deserving of a top 20 ranking, but it's nice to get a win. It's hard not, Tim, it's hard to not just immediately jump into talking Clemson, right?
Yeah.
But that was just my takeaway. It's just, it's nice to get back to an identity, and Coach Reese kind of getting out of his own way and doing, calling plays and just doing what we do well.
No, on my way over here, first thing I thought about was the post, the Lindsey against Stanford, you know, catch that and multiple others, the multiple touchdowns taken off, you know, missed or taken off the board in Stanford on one drive alone after the blocked punt where they had to settle for a field goal. I wrote down November to remember. How many times have you heard that in college football? November to remember. This is where you're at, and Notre Dame is one or two plays away from being 7-1, which is just maddening to constantly keep thinking about that. But they're 5-3. They've beaten two really good football teams. Yeah, I know BYU has turned into a mess, but at the time, ranked 16th, playing good competitive football. And obviously, Syracuse is a good football team. They got some dudes all over the place. They have that one tight end hybrid wide receiver tight end guy that Notre Dame couldn't match up with anywhere half the time. So he was a dude. And November to remember, that's what I kept thinking about driving here. Just the missed opportunities that Notre Dame and how close this team is. But at the same time, I'm a big, big Parcells fan, and you are who you are. This team is 5-3. They're 5-3 because they've had four games with 50% or less passing. Five. I don't know. They were barely above 50 against Ohio State. Then you go Marshall, and obviously the last three games of Drew Pine. Drew Pine goes first three starts over 70%. He's up there looking like Jimmy Clausen in 09, slinging the ball over the place. I mentioned a month ago. Now he's got three straight games under 50. I know he was 52 against UNLV, but those were the two little shovel passes that aren't even a pass, which they count. So technically, he's three straight games under 50% going into Clemson. Hey, I'm a big believer. You could run the ball all you want, but there's a time in each and every single football game, no matter what level you're at, you have to throw the ball somewhere to win a game and to make a big play. And what's Notre Dame going to do in the next 6 days? That's going to be a big question next Saturday night.
If I may, before Goolsby speaks, I would like to address Drew Pine, because I got a lot of YouTube comments and tweets in these past few days about Mr.
Pine. You did it to yourself, Mike. You did it to yourself.
Listen. A few weeks ago, I saw CJ Carr play, Notre Dame's quarterback, commit 24 cycle. He stunk. He stunk that day. But my opinion didn't change of him because I know who he is. Just quit shaking your beautiful head, okay?
Hey, read this. What's the name of the show, Mike?
Hold on. It's gone. I removed it. It doesn't say anything.
So, Mike, again, CJ Carr stunk, right? And without even you telling me, I know that you mean statistically he stunk, yes?
Yes.
Okay. But he still looked the part. Yes?
May I finish?
Yes, you may.
I'm going to make a graphic, says the Mike Singer Show, real quick. Listen. Mr. Pine. It was bad. And that's all I really have to say. He's not a good quarterback. I'm coming back on that. I'm off that bandwagon. What's most frustrating to me is you've seen the flashes of good, but he's just been so darn inconsistent, and his decision making has been extremely questionable. If you're going to be this limited athlete and limited thrower of the football, you have to be excellent at everything else, and he's just not right now.
No, the just real quick.
I'll tail him between my legs.
No, I'll go. I mean, the first thing I keep thinking about in that game was, you know, this one of the scan offensive plays. They only ran 10, by the way. So before people lose their mind on the scan, they only ran 10.
All one passes, by the way, Tim. I think they were all passes, by the way.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think I tried to share. Two runs, which the runs kicked off 7, 10 yards on a couple. But most of them are passes because they were just hammering the ball, and then it was third down. They see something they want to do, and the checks, by the way, Tommy Rees did scan in, were like, dudes were open. How do you not hit them? The one is Lorenzo Styles. How do you bounce a screen pass to him? The dude's wide open. Alt, Patterson, Zeke, those dudes are all getting out there on a wave, and they bounce past the ball to Lorenzo Styles, and he catches just, I mean, my God, it's a 10-yard pass for crying out loud. So, which is the most maddening thing thinking about Pine, because he threw a rope to Mayer right before halftime, 41 yards. I went back, charted where he threw it and where Mayer caught it, 41 yards. So it's like he can't do it. Or is it after he throws that far, he's just so exhausted he can't throw that far for the next hour?
Well, I think, Tim, I want to get into this a little bit because, you know, you're a coach, right? So, yeah. But going back to that toss to Mayer, beautiful play, slides in the pocket. Yep. But if it's to Mayer, he has that level of comfort.
Yes.
And it just it's easier for him, but to pull the trigger and distribute the ball elsewhere, it just doesn't come naturally to him. But like, Tim, if you put your coach hat on, what is it with Pine? So forget all the physical limitations. Like, what's going on in Drew Pine's head going into this Clemson game? You know, kind of rewinding the past three games. Where's he at mentally, do you figure, from your coaching experience?
I was actually rewatching the game this morning, taking some notes. And one of the things I wrote down was just his face, right? His mannerism. He looks like he has no clue or he's frightened. You know, it's no confidence. You know, it always seems like when he goes to the sideline, you don't see him talk to a lot of people for whatever reason. You know, they showed that quite a bit in the Syracuse game, him just walking around, just shaking his head, frustrated. Didn't know what to do. There's one really bad play. It may have been that right after the Styles, you know, skip pass on the screen. And poor Lorenzo, it's like, dude, just get me the darn football. But and Freeman like put his hand, you know, arm around him. But Freeman was just like, felt like he wanted to just squeeze his helmet off. And I'm like, dude, are you serious? And Freeman was, you know, trying to bite his tongue, like, all right, hang in there. And I don't know. It is interesting. I've noticed that where his mannerisms, his body language, the confidence, the, you know, me personally, I think ever since Tyler Horka put the, you know, he tweeted out before the Stanford game, you know, sorry, Tyler, if you're watching, but he was like, oh, Pine's got the mojo tonight. He's doing the Conor McGregor strut. That was before Stanford. So ever since then, Horka needs to go back in his Twitter timeline, delete that thing. Because it's floating out there. Because ever since then, he has not had no strut. There's dudes open. It has just been absolutely frustrating to watch. Because you see, like, a couple of those passes to the Colsey were, like, right on the money. You know. But then it's – Mayer has to catch a pass. Luckily, he's sitting down on the one which he's sitting down and he catches it. The ball was so low. Luckily, Mayer got rerouted, fell down, and caught it. But, I don't know.
Yeah, the passes that – Two of Colsey's catches, frankly, I don't remember the third, but they're both comebacks, right? It was like a 10-yard comeback.
Yes.
Mike Singer. One was a deep crosser. Special.
Deep crosser, and then they hit him on the comeback, which was a great play because they doubled Mayer, who was running a seam route, and they doubled him. Boom. Colsey's all by himself. It was awesome.
So I think, you know, I said it on last week's show that, like, we, the Notre Dame fan base, analysts, like, I guess ourselves, we were maybe sold a bill of goods in terms of what Drew Pine is as a player, because all you heard about was his confidence and his bravado and his swagger and all that. And it's sort of gone. So was that like, and I said this about the Ohio State game, you know, we came in confident and physical and loud and brash. And then we went into halftime and to me, we came out a different team. So it's like, and I was like, we seem like a bunch of fake tough guys. So if your quarterback, the man at the helm, is, you know, full of false confidence, that ain't a good look.
No, because
that's like, we've never heard anything about his arm strength, his release, his touch on the ball, his athleticism. All of the things that were touted about Drew were, again, his intangibles. There was nothing really tangible. But it, when so like you see the result of not having physical ability. I mean, if you told me that Drew Pine was a walk on, I'd be like, okay, I would have some empathy there. But I mean, this is a scholarship kid that was recruited, and yeah, it's just not there. But yeah, it's funny. You were talking about going back and be like, oh, we could be 7-1, and I can't help it. Forgive me, but I can't be like, man, what if Buckner had this time? What if Buckner had this running game? How many first downs would have Tyler picked up in this game, given all the time that Drew has back there? Okay, maybe nothing's open. We're working off the television copy. You know, Tyler had taken off.
I agree.
And picked it up on foot.
I agree, because that's been the thing where people are like, well, you know, the book on Drew Pine's written, so to speak. You know, everyone knows what to do against him. Drop eight. Q's dropped eight a bunch of times. And Stanford did as well a bunch of times, but you're right. Just take off and run. No one's accounting for his scrambling, which is the big difference between him and Ian Book. Ian Book would take off and go get yards if it's 3rd and 7. Hell, I'll go get 10 yards scrambling if you're not going to spy me. You would have to obviously spy Tyler Buckner. So they're just dropping eight. He's no threat running the ball. And it's noticeable, and it is hindering the team. Luckily, they just hammered the living high hell out of Syracuse up front and just bludgeoned those guys. I mean, they're going three tight ends. They're bringing Thomas Salerno in like his double wings and just playing 10 on the line of scrimmage or 9 on the line of scrimmage and just smashing it. And kudos to those running backs who just had some huge holes. I know people always talk about, you know, it's all inside A-gap runs. Those guys were cutting it to the C-gaps a lot off of cuts, which a lot of inside zone is supposed to do. And the tackles, I have to give kudos to both those guys. When they would run to the right and cut left, Joel Alt's smashing dudes. And go back and rewatch it, people, out here listening to us tonight, is Blake Fisher probably has 6-7 pancakes on cutback runs where he's just smashing the living hell out of dudes. They're running left, cut right. I thought he had one of his best football games, at least down
blocking. I'm so excited to see Blake as a junior, and just I can't wait for him to clean up his body just a little bit, work on conditioning, foot speed just a little bit more, because gosh, you can see it.
Yes.
But yeah, he just needs another year, I think, to really kind of clean himself up. But I agree, and I thought, kind of getting away from Drew for a moment anyway, Tim. The things that we tried to do creatively in the run game, I did think that, I think in Tyree's first series, they tried to run stretch with him. And I think because of the dome, and I think Zeke Correll couldn't get off the ball, or maybe the guy over him, their defensive end, number 17, made a play from the backside, but we weren't quite synced up with the snap. And I think the noise had something to do with that. And I think we ran a little screen to him. Oh, excuse me. Ran a little swing pass with him.
Yes, swing.
The next play. It was a dead play on the stretch. Love to see him under center on that stretch play, kind of that USC thing that we talked about, Tim.
Yep.
Versus being in that pistol formation. But it was interesting to see that, like, I've been saying it all year, the usage of the backs and the packages and the different spots where we would plug them in, whether it was leaving depending on, but I mean, the different backs that we would have in pass protection, short yardage, we're putting Tyree in there, which is like, it never quite synced up to me. And I think that this many games into the season, Coach Reese seems to have a better handle on, we're running this play or this package, whether he's, rotating guys in with Coach McCullough. I feel like they've got that licked finally. I think they finally got that resolved in terms of, we're running this type of play. We want this type of body type in there in the backfield.
Tim,
I was going to say real quick, what's that?
You got 30 seconds, Tim. We got to move somewhere else. Go ahead.
I mean, the whole Chris Tyree thing is, he's the third running back. He's fully established himself to be the third running back. He, The other two are more violent. They're better cutters. They're better football players. Chris Tyree does not have a lot of wiggle, a lot of cut to him. He's the third running back. So whatever he gets from here on out is taken away from those two, I feel.
Last thing, Mike, it is the Mike Goolsby show.
All right, damn it.
Zip
right,
it. Ahead. As a coach, Tim, I do not understand how Tyree being 190 pounds or whatever he is. I mean, he looks like he's 180 pounds. Remember that pick I'd sent you of all the running backs in the group? Yes. And folks, wait till you see Jadarian Price next year. Holy smokes, as Tim would say. But why can't Tyree, as small and as light as he is, make one cut and put his foot in the ground and go? He always has to do the stutter step, the chop steps. I'll never understand it, why somebody can't work with him on, you know, as light and low to the ground as he is. He should be able to make that cut in his sleep without all the choppy steps. It really frustrates me because I really like Tyree. And I remember one of our first shows, Singer, you and I did, it was like Tyree versus what's-his-face from Clemson?
Shipley.
And I was like, I prefer Tyree. And I mean, I'm eating some crow there when you look at their careers up to this point. But that's maddening to me, that aspect of Tyree's game.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Sorry, Mike. Go ahead, buddy.
All right. We're just going to go ahead and hear from one of our sponsors, Rogue Shop. It's a husband and wife outfit, as Mr. Rogue and his wife, Char, are craft cannabis farmers who specialize in small batch sustainable plant medicine, a true holistic type of small business. Farm it and grow it all themselves, do everything by hand. And their website to visit, as you can see on the screen, it is www.rogueshop.com. There are products that give you euphoria, but so much more than that. Products that have been known to help with anything from stress and anxiety to chronic pain and insomnia. Have a question about what their product does? Jump on a live chat with the owners of the website and they will steer you in the right direction. Char and Mr. Rogue will take care of you and answer anything you have. And their goal is holistic healing, making your life better if you suffer from stress, insomnia, reducing inflammation, anxiety, and mood disorders. They have topicals that are great for pain in specific areas as well. And when you write as many articles as I do and as many YouTube shows as I do, you don't get great sleep unless you have some Rogue Shop products. So fall asleep, stay asleep, head to rogueshop.com. Promo code blue and gold gets you 10% off again. Blue and gold, that promo gets you 10% off. So please do head over to Rogue Shop and check it out.
How is it that Bolden Landing, who never sponsored us, gave us a few free samples, whereas Rogue Shop is a sponsor and we haven't gotten any free samples?
Sounds like a great discussion to have off air, Mr. Goolsby.
All right.
All right, moving along. Tim, Goolsby, where you guys want to go next? Actually, we can go Super Chats. How about that? We've got a few Super Chats. So, all right. John Monty says, I wish we had a quarterback to get these receivers the ball downfield. 2 years is a long way off, or even 1 year. I guess he's kind of talking about incoming quarterbacks. Any thoughts here, Goolsby?
Again, it really limits the offense. And this is the thing. It's hard to, like, Tim, you can probably chime in here, but it's like week to week, you know, you sort of, you take in the game, you digest, you talk about it. Unintentionally or intentionally, I tend to look at things like big picture. You know, when I committed to go play at the University of Notre Dame, I did sort of win a national championship. Like in my heart and in my mind, that's what I thought I was doing. And it's like big picture, that's what we think about. I still think about is like big picture culture, all these little things, recruiting wise, positions of need, areas of improvement. So it does feel good to get a win against a team like a Syracuse and to beat them up, Tim. But when you think big picture, it's like, man, we ain't without a quarterback and without a little bit more elite traits, you know, more elite traits at the wide receiver position, we still got a long way to go. So while you do get encouraged and you do get excited about a win against the Syracuse on the road, you kind of come back to earth and you're like, man, we got a long ways to go. And a Clemson is even a little bit, I think we'll beat Clemson. I said, I thought we'd lose to Syracuse and beat Clemson. I think we beat Clemson, but when we're talking about knocking off a Bama, Georgia, shoot, even a Michigan nowadays, like you need a quarterback. Oof.
Oh yeah. That's why so much of the conversation the last month has always been about the past. Everyone wants to rip, Reese, recruiting, Kelly, all these things. And I don't know, something changed with me a couple of weeks ago where I just switched it. And it was just like, you got to focus on now. You got to focus moving forward. This is my belief, is who cares what happened in 2019 recruiting or whatnot. Sure, does it hurt now? Of course it does. But it's all about Freeman. It's all about what he's doing, these coaches, his culture, as you talk about there, Mike, and moving forward in recruiting and the skill class he has coming in. These running backs he has coming in are freaks. They just are. There's not one running back in this program right now that cuts like Love, Edwards. These dudes run. Estime will run you over. Diggs has a little. Tyree, I just don't think Tyree's a shake and bake type guy like some of these guys coming in. Some of these receivers are just better pass catchers, better true receivers than what's on the staff now. So I'm looking at it like, move forward. What the heck's going on? It really, really stinks. I could say this 6,000 times in a row that Freeman, Reese, I'll throw in Mike's buddy, Chad Bowen, who's the recruiting coordinator. I'm just using him out there because he's a recruiting guy, Mike. But he's part of it. All that dude does is recruit. And these guys could not get a quarterback this year, which is just maddening. Maddening how these guys could not find one. And especially when someone's on campus and all he does is recruit. So that's going to be the biggest question moving forward. Guys want to talk about moving forward, throwing balls, all that good stuff. They've got to get a transfer quarterback, whoever the heck that is. Because there's some bad quarterbacks out there too. So I've coached a long time and I've coached guys that have transferred. Just because you get a transfer don't mean that dude's a dude. Brandon Joseph transferred. He's just finally made a play and it's game eight. So just because you get a transfer does not mean they are elite dudes. And I think sometimes we just assume a transfer is going to be a star. And
Notre Dame needs
a quarterback. Notre Dame needs a quarterback. Go ahead.
There's no guarantee that a transfer or even a highly touted kid coming out of high school isn't going to hit, right? It happens every year in the NFL. Guys are paid millions of dollars to evaluate and draft, scout, et cetera. However, Tim, those kids aren't a liability. I mean, Drew's a liability.
Yes, I agree. I agree. There's no way they could go. If they win out, I don't see Drew Pine completing 72% of his passes these next four games. If he does, then something just clicked and awesome. I don't think that's going to happen. There's 2023, there's no way Drew Pine could be the quarterback next year. They just can't.
And I don't know if there's opportunities there to dump the ball off, to check. I mean, Tom Brady's going to go into the Hall of Fame, and that's what he did throughout the course of his career, is just kind of check the ball down. And it's like, I don't know, can he not see? Can he literally not see downfield because of the wall in front of him?
But he does complete some passes. Bizarre. He does complete some passes where you're looking at him and you're like, keep it going. You can do it. And then it just goes boom downward from there. After you see some beautiful passes, it just flips. And that's the way it's been these last three games with him at quarterback. And it's frustrating to watch, and it's hurting the team. And now they're getting ready to play the fifth ranked team in the country. Clemson's going to respect zero pass games. So he's going to have to throw the ball Saturday for them to have a shot.
It is nice to see, though, that, like, go ahead, Mike.
No, I'm muting Tim so he can't rebuttal. Go ahead, Mike.
I was just going to say, like, Tim, you can recall the 2002 team that I was on. You bring in Coach Willingham, who gets rid of Carlisle Holiday's, God-given. I mean, Carlisle Holiday to this day is top five, top 10 athlete I've ever been around, just in terms of everything he could do, run, jump, throw, hit a baseball. Coach Willingham takes that away from him. We're going to go West Coast, right? So everything's based off of timing, short passes, whatever. That doesn't suit his strengths. We didn't score a touchdown in 2002. We wound up ranked fourth in the country before we lost to Boston College. But we didn't score a touchdown, Tim, for the first seven games. Didn't score a touchdown, and we still won because of defense and special teams. So it's really encouraging to see, as our schedule kind of gets turned up here, the level of competition is going to get ratcheted up. It's really, really, really nice to see, and it's been a long time coming, where special teams is, you know, three games in a row blocking punts. That's wild. And we're starting to turn the ball over on defense. So if there is a glimmer of hope going into a Clemson game, it is that maybe we give our offense another couple possessions. So Drew's good for one pick a game at this point, the last three. One tip pass, turnover. So if we can create a couple ourselves, at least we'll be on the plus side of that, which is reason for hope.
All right, folks, fellas, we got six super chats queued up. They keep rolling in, so that's what I'm saying. We gotta move this thing along. JP says, okay, guys, your grades for Reese and Pine. Mine are Tommy Reese, B, Pine, C minus. Problem with Clemson is, can you run on them? If not, can Pine win the game?
Goals you can go first, Tim.
Sorry.
You left them muted.
Yeah, I left you muted there, Tim. Go ahead. Start over.
It's all good. I have no, you know, people may not like this because it's very unpopular, I'm assuming, but I have no problems with Tommy Reese, what he's called. He's called some dudes that have gotten a lot of open more times than not. He's controlled the tempo. He's controlled the game, game management in these wins. Even the Stanford game, people won't lose their mind. How many people were open nonstop and didn't make plays? That is the offensive coordinator putting his guys in position to make a play. And the coach can't catch, coach can't block, coach can't do anything. As Mike Goolsby knows better than anyone, the coach, he has to put players in position to make a play. And if you are put in position to make a play and you don't make a play, that is on the player. So drop balls, wide open post routes that go 10 yards over his head, that's not on Tommy Reese. And as far as Pine goes, yeah, he's won some games, so C-. What the heck? I'll go with JP. C-, a frustrating C-. How's that?
Yeah, Tim, you and I are very much simpatico in terms of our feelings on Coach Reese. I think he took a lot of arrows early in the season. And I don't know, man. I don't think he's calling that bad of a game. Yeah. You know, I think it was – I heard it somewhere like prior to this Syracuse game, he had missed five touchdown passes that like would-be touchdown passes. Oh. We just couldn't connect.
Yep.
And, you know, in college football, I mean, football nowadays, it's all about splash plays. So if he's teeing it up and for whatever reason, the receiver, the quarterback, you can't connect, that's not on Coach Reese. So I'd give Coach Reese probably a B+. I mean, and you go back, we look at the entirety of the season, you're breaking in a brand new quarterback. The interior offensive line is leaky throughout the first half of the season. You've got this ragtag group of wide receivers with inexperience and, like, you know, talent that we're not quite certain what that level is. And I still feel like we don't really quite know what's in that room. But he comes out with wrinkles, like the Mitchell Evans thing is a nice little wrinkle. I don't know if that was an original Tommy Reese idea, if we saw that elsewhere, but I like the usage of Jaden Thomas in this game, Tim, kind of putting him as that attached tight end thing with his body type. It's interesting to me.
Yeah.
My critique of Reese would be his like assessment of talent, I think, but in terms of like the specifics of play calling, I'll give him like a B+. A B+. And as far as like Drew Pine goes, he gets like a participation trophy. You know, you showed up, have your juice box, you know, and some orange slices or whatever, and get out of here, you know, jump in the minivan and go home. He gets a participation trophy. We're not even going to give out letter grades.
Yeah.
What's the next one, Mike?
Yeah. Go to the next
one. Jonathan Parsons wants, why not go to the ACC full time? About to get our 26th win versus the ACC. Any thoughts on this? Just quickly, guys, on because we got a couple more super chats from John. But you guys, thoughts on ACC?
Stay independent as long as you can. That's the way I like
it. Sit and wait. I think the way this is shaping up, you're going to have like two or three mega conferences. With our national draw, our national audience, our national brand, we're still going to be the belle of the ball in a lot of ways. So, yeah, I'm with Tim, sit and wait.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be playing real quick. No, I was going to say they're going to be playing an SEC team coming up, starting with A&M, then it's Arkansas, then it's Bama, then it's Florida. They're going to start getting an SEC. SC's on the schedule every year. I was reading just a couple of weeks ago in the Detroit News Press that Notre Dame, Michigan are working on a long-term contract coming up here. So hopefully that's true. Where they're going to be early in the season like the old days, play game one or two and get after it. So Notre Dame's going to be fine. They don't need the ACC.
Yeah, we don't need their officials either, right, Tim?
Oh, my Lord.
You mentioned Texas A&M, and I have to bring this up, Mike, and Mike, maybe you could add something to this. And, Mike, maybe we'll go a little bit long tonight. I know you're busy, but
– No, I'm
like Texas A&M, this whole thing, kids smoking dope in the locker room, you know, kids are getting kicked off the team. You heard this?
No.
Yeah, that's the A&M thing. Those guys
That lauded over recruiting class, Mike, like half of the class is gone because the kids are just running amok. It's absurd. And then you saw what happened in that tunnel with the Michigan State, Michigan game. I presume you've seen these Michigan players getting jumped. And, you know, I tweeted about that at GCA Football. Find me on Twitter. But Mel Tucker needs to lose his job with no buyout. And I was just watching that, and I was like, man – for whatever reason, dude, like I'm proud to have played at Notre Dame, and like I'm proud of our culture. I'm proud of our graduation rate. Like when you see all this bullshit going on in all these other programs, it's like it should make us proud to be a Notre Dame fan because we still compete. We still win games, and like you don't have to worry about stuff like that, you know? So I just want to sprinkle that in because that's just beyond, man, what's going on at some of these other programs.
All right, another one here from John says, also, what were your thoughts on the linebacker scheme this week? Didn't feel like I saw as many cross stunts in the A-gaps, and with that, thought they played a lot better in their gaps. So, yeah, Mr. Goolsby, what do you guys say about here? And then we'll go to Tim.
He said he didn't see as many cross dogs. It's like they might not have been crossing, but they were still bringing them. I mean, I thought that to myself when I'm watching. Tim. Yep. The consistency at which we blitz our inside linebackers, I've never seen anything like it. No, I've never seen anything like it. But yeah, maybe this week there was like 20% left. I will say Syracuse's first touchdown, and I've been complaining about this since last year with, you know, Drew White and these guys, like, hold your damn water. If you are coming on a blitz, stop telegraphing it. Like, it's the – Do you not have a sense for their cadence where you can hit this thing on the run? We're down there in the near red zone. I forget what linebackers were in the game. They gave it away. And then the quarterback checks one-on-one fade route to their stud wide receiver. And it was like, we did it to ourselves. Coach or their quarterback sees the blitz coming. Hey, hold up. I got time. Check. One-on-one coverage. We run into the, you know, pass pro. It's brutal. And it's stuff like that, Tim, where it's like you can see the, I guess, you know, the ebbs and flows, you know, the ebbs and flows, the ups and downs, but maybe some steady improvement. But we still do some boneheaded stuff and makes you want to pull your hair out. What do you got to say, Tim? Linebacker.
Oh,
play.
Man. Yeah. I was looking at my notebook and about half of the defensive calls, I just got MW next to it, meaning Mike Will Blitz. They're going all over the place. And, one that comes to mind, Mike will blitz it. Number 9, Adamiola, is playing the wide side end. He takes the swing back. There's no contain because they're going up the gut. The 3-tech stays inside, doesn't get outside on his rush. Quarterback runs down the field. Boom, chucks it deep on a big pass. He had all day to throw on that one. There's no contain. No, Mike will blitzes are – consistent, nonstop, especially in Syracuse. Even Freeman talked about it in his post-game press conference where he even had to tell Al Golden, hey, we need to chill on some of these blitzes because they were just going haywire. And one of them, you know, poor Morrison, when he gave up that first touchdown, Freeman talked about they screwed up. They told him to press bell on the goal line. Why would you press bell? They brought everybody up the middle, and the guy just catches in. Ties the game at 7-7. So, no, those dudes blitz. I just looked at one of my notes. Callie B-gap, Gadsden over the middle wide open there in the fourth quarter. So they blitzed a ton against Syracuse.
And the other thing, last note on the linebacker blitzing and the frequency of which we do so. You know, I played that position, and like, if there's no element of surprise to a blitz, if you can't like time it up, it's really tough. So I'm not being critical of like, you know, JD or Kali or Marist for not getting home. Cause it's like, if there's a 320 pound guard waiting on me, dude, I'm not Von Miller. Like, it's hard to throw a pass rush move in that condensed of a space. It's like, it's either going to work or it's not. So, which leads me to believe that either those kids don't have instincts to fill Tim, so we have to send them, or I don't know. I don't quite have the explanation. It's this year, the Mike Will is last year's Isaiah Boskey playing inside linebacker. It's just,
yes.
What the hell? Yeah. It's like, we got rid of that, and then we jumped to this year.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Super chat here from Dennis. I'm not 100% sure the wording here, but can you rate the receiver?
He's saying, can you assess the wide receiver play until you actually have a legitimate quarterback? I got you, Dennis.
And what do you think?
You can kind of go back to me, Mike. It goes back to that eyeball test. Like, I can see Tobias Merriweather get into his route, and it's like, man, dude covers a lot of ground and very few steps.
Yes.
Like, I saw Deion Colsey, you know, double catch a pretty routine comeback route, you know, where he's fighting the ball. So, like, those are things that I could use to kind of assess. But I said this last episode, Tim, the level of engagement and want to, in like, you know, level of compete at this wide receiver position. If we're only going to throw the ball to Michael Mayer, it's difficult to ask an 18, 19 year old kid to be consistent with his level of play and level compete. And now you sprinkle in the fact that we're going to hammer the ball 40 times a game, that level of compete and the level of engagement, one would assume, would continue to slough off. So it's really difficult to gauge ability when maybe they're not entirely dialed in.
No, I agree. And that's been some of the thing where you've seen Lindsey frustrated. You know, he's frustrated. I mean, that guy should have 6 touchdowns this year. I mean, he's been open so much, balls overthrown all the time. Poor guy comes back for his 5th year and he can't get one break, you know, Marshall wide open, overthrows it. It seems like every game. Styles, the same thing. Perfect screen pass set up. The whole line's out there to go knock the heck out of people, and the ball skips to him. Luckily, Tobias is so young, so he's not really frustrated, because Lorenzo obviously played a ton last year. It was nice to see Styles come in, because I guess Lindsey was sick during the week, so he only played a little, and they just played him special teams because he didn't practice. So they went with the bigger guys out there, so to speak. So it was nice to see him engage. The Tobias one, man, he's right there. It's like, come down with that ball, right? Just come down with that one right there on that end zone. But you're right. The engagement.
It was an underthrown ball, yes. But he probably should have caught it.
Oh, it's right there. Exactly. With his height, real quick on Tobias, man. When he runs, he looks like he runs a 5.240. And like you're saying, Mike, because he's so long. I mean, he does not look like, man, he covers 20 yards in 3 steps because he's just long and just galloping down there. And he got
the
down
first
there.
He guy, down the first
so fast.
The first guy that I ever paid attention to like that, and I'm not at all comparing Tobias to Randy Moss, but like, if you watch Randy Moss come off the ball when the ball snapped, I mean, he goes 5 yards in 2 steps, and then beyond that, it's, you know, 5 yards every like step and a half, because he's 6'4" and is built like he is. So yeah, and he's got some bounce. I mean, I think Deion Colsey's a real stiff kid. I think he's stiff. He doesn't seem like he's got a lot of bend to him. A lot of Mike Singer, you know, kind of DNA in Deion Colsey. So, but yeah, I want so badly for Styles to get back in the flow of things. I just really do, because he was such a shining star last year and gave us a lot of reason for optimism. And I'd love to see something, maybe a screen, you know, God, if we could have completed that screen pass, but I still have a lot of, he's got a lot of upside to me in Styles.
What's funny thing about last year, was that the receiver position, it was all about Styles and Colsey. Why are we playing so-and-so? Why isn't it Styles and Colsey? Now it's Merriweather. And so I just think it's funny that it's always the freshmen and never the sophomores. But, yeah, I do think it's nice that Colsey guy went from playing nothing to 30 snaps and catching some three first down passes on three targets. So
that was big.
Yeah, like.
But can I last thought, Mike?
Yeah, of course. Go ahead.
I'm begging you for
your
time
show. Your show.
I said this earlier about Coach Reese. I think he's a pretty good play caller. You know, and the execution is one thing, and is that his game planning and the practice prep that leads to poor execution? I don't have that answer. But the plays that are dialed up, I like them most of the time. I do have a critique of the recruiting and his ability to like assess what kids are good at. Like, you know, when you look at Colsey, it's like, okay, he's going to be this type of guy. He's a comeback guy. He's a Mike Singer, you know, he's a 6 yard, 8 yard, 10 yard comeback guy. You know, Jaden Thomas isn't a go get it deep guy. Maybe he's a crosser. Maybe he's like a poor man's Deebo Samuel type thing, kind of a physical kid.
Yeah.
So I just feel like, and I would even say that with the running back group, where like we're taking square pegs and we're trying to put them in round holes, whether it be a lot of different offensive skill positions, either in the backfield or at the wide receiver position. So I think he deserves a little bit of criticism there to be like, you've got kids doing specific roles where that's not where they're best suited. And it's obvious to somebody like me, but maybe it takes him, you know, 7 games into the season to figure some of this stuff out.
All right.
Hey, Goolsby, yeah. Real quick, Singer. Goolsby, how about Tobias and Marie Stovall?
Same speed? I love Mosto.
Yeah.
He's a fun teammate. I think Tobias is a little bouncier and significantly twitchier than Mosto was.
Gotcha.
But Mosto was a big kid.
Big dude. Yeah.
All right, I'm knocking these two guys off the screen, and it's time to hear from another sponsor, which is actually Mike Goolsby's favorite sponsor, if I might not add. And if you are looking for that perfect gift for a Notre Dame fan in your life, or dare I say yourself, there's one place to go, and that's Augie's Locker Room, which is located less than a mile from Notre Dame Stadium and was named the best Notre Dame's collectibles in the country. If you are a passionate Irish fan and you're looking for that special Notre Dame piece to complete your rec room, go to augieslockerroom.com. And for people watching on YouTube, you can see just a few of the awesome items that they have, which includes Notre Dame Stadium pieces, jerseys, helmets, autographs, one-of-a-kind Rockne items, exclusive Joe Montana signed items, and Augie is partnering with famous sculptor Jerry McKenna to be the exclusive dealer of his Notre Dame bronze statues, which are the statues you've seen around the stadium. Augie has Jerry McKenna's artwork for sale in his store as well. And if Augie doesn't have it, he will find it for you. Visit augieslockerroom.com. Or stop in at 1811 South Bend Avenue and see the vintage helmet display dating back to 1890. AugiesLockerRoom.com, 574-277-NDND. All right. Yes. Always. It's awesome as always. Augie's Locker Room. Super chats. Still got a few queued up. I will say, Mike, whenever you talk about my past as a wide receiver many moons ago, you're always spot on. Spot on, sir.
Hey. I'm an evaluator, dude.
Have you seen my tape?
No, but I could just picture it.
Yeah, well, you are correct. Well, you got it. I could have sworn you've studied it just based on how you're talking about it. Susan says Freeman was very animated on the sidelines. Does this silence the critique that he is unemotional / lost? Mr. Goolsby?
Susan always asks very poignant questions. So I appreciate that. Does the silence the critique that he – so I played for a stoic coach in Coach Willingham. Tim, you probably remember that. This was by far the most animated that I'd seen Freeman. You know, I think when offense was rolling through, refs allowed Syracuse to sub in and sub out, Coach Freeman was yelling so much that he actually lost his gum. And I like it. And that's just kind of like him sort of evolving as a coach, but I absolutely like it. I mean, football is football. I think recruits like it. You know, I think he's still kind of finding his way. I think that Notre Dame is so PG. I think that Notre Dame is so PG, Tim, that Freeman was like extra. He was G-rated, you know, in terms of the way his handling with the media and his approach and press conference and stuff like that. He was almost kind. He was like almost kind in his approach. And I think as he's sort of sowing his oats and kind of getting his footing here, he can be a little bit more expressive in his own way. And I'm here for it. I'm absolutely here for it. And I think that the team responds. I think that recruits respond. As long as he can find a measure of consistency, Tim, and you understand how important that is as a coach, you know, he can't run hot and cold. I mean, he can have, you know, there can be some waves to it, but there can't be extreme. So as he, you know, kind of defines his, what his characteristics are going to be as a leader and as a coach, but a little bit of piss and vinegar, I'm here for it, man.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Coach Holtz always used to talk about is don't flinch. Don't flinch. Don't react to something where the kids are going to see you, the players are going to see you, and, oh, you know, have that little lull or, oh, we don't trust our coach. Or not we don't trust him, but coach sees something bad, so I'm going to react off of that. So Holtz used to talk about that all the time. But, yeah, in that instance where he got hyped up, yeah, he didn't think there was Syracuse's running guys off there, but the ref – Freeman broke it down after the game. Freeman's like, the ref said you had a couple players run a couple feet on the field, so we gave Syracuse the chance to adjust from seeing that from across the field. So, yeah, Freeman got hyped up. He's been, you know, it's the face. He's got the facial expressions a lot on TV, but you know, Mike, you're out there playing. You're not looking at your coach half the time if you're the Mike backer filling or the nose guard and stuff like that. You know, you're not caring what your coach says, but you see it.
I can't think of one instance that I ever spoke to a head coach during a game ever. You know,
no, you're just playing ball. Yeah, you're just playing ball. And even Freeman's on the headset a lot. He's changing a few things. You could see him getting more comfortable, probably in his role, which that was the biggest thing as we move forward on the 2023. Is it's going to be a heck of a lot different next year than it is this year. It's just. It's going to happen. It's called experience. So.
Yeah, and I think, too, you know, we talk about him, again, growing into the role. And, I mean, I could say that, like, as a salesperson. I mean, there's things that I've said and did in sales meetings and pitches and first impressions that I did as a, you know, 30-year-old that, like, it makes my skin crawl to think about doing it now 10 years later. Yeah, as I've gotten better and better and better, right? We've all done that with whatever – you know, pursuit we've taken on in life. But I don't think that, you know, I think the whirlwind that has been Marcus Freeman's life, like between when he got chose by the team and got hired on as a head coach at Notre Dame football, just the whirlwind that he was in, the recruiting, you know, he's got young kids at home and all that stuff. So it's like, man, when has that poor guy ever had a chance to come up for air and like actually be a coach versus being a figurehead in terms of the media? So it's fun. It's kind of fun to see him really take more ownership and actually be a ball coach more so than a recruiter, a media darling, what have you. So I'm really excited to see how that continues to evolve.
That goes back to, there's your pick. But that goes back to
or mute you, Tim. Go ahead, buddy.
I was going to say Jim Tressel. Those are his, you know, they have weekly conversations with his old ball coach, Coach Jim Tressel. So I think coach is, you know, mentoring him, chatting with him, feeding him information, things, how to run a program. And it's that quote I talked about with Singer a week ago where Tressel, you know, a news outlet asked him, what was the first piece of advice you gave Freeman? He said, it's your team. Your name's on it. You know, who cares who the assistants are? Your name's on it. Run the program your way. So Freeman needs to learn how to do that and slowly going to be doing it. And the perfect guy, the whole reason why, you know, let's also don't forget is he was hired. The biggest example, you know, Jack Swarbrick used was Dabo Sweeney. So he really loved that Dabo Sweeney influence, that type of coach that Sweeney was as an assistant, gave him the job at Clemson. And Jack talked about that when he hired Freeman. So he's going to get firsthand look at Mr. Dabo on Saturday. So that's going to be fun.
Yeah, I did want to show you guys were talking about that picture for YouTube audience. I mean, Audrick Estime is that's just a different animal. But look at Jadarian Price's arms. I mean, the dude is – I mean, look at him next to Logan Diggs.
Well, I think that's – to be fair, I think that's Logan Diggs coming off of that, you know, shoulder surgery and all that.
Okay. Yeah, whereas Price can only use the
– He just dips.
Tim, I've heard you say it before, like Love. Like that's an SEC running back.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like so somebody like Prince Kali, that's an all SEC linebacker. Yes. You know, I was watching the game with my folks and there was a play where Kali was walking off the field and I paused like that. Look at that kid. Yeah. Look at that waist. I mean, that is – that's – so – and
Snead.
Jalen Snead. Yeah, Jalen Snead. I mean, but there was a picture. That's why Coach Freeman's here.
There was a picture of him on the TV just smiling. He was happy. It was a big play, and you saw him in the background, and he looked like Jadarian Price. So he's been putting in the work as well. But same thing. Those are SEC dudes, and those guys need to get on the field pretty soon. And once they do, just a different level of speed out there, you know?
Yep.
You know, Tuli Alamaka played a ton of Viper. I think he got 6-7 snaps playing Viper this past week. So is that going to be a sea change moving forward for him? I found that interesting watching him run around out there.
Mike, you got more super chats?
Oh, of course we do. Good to go. Another one from Jonathan here. He says, a Notre Dame quarterback's top attribute can't be an intangible. That's quoting Mr. Mike Goolsbee. Most statement in a decade. Mr. Goolsbee?
I say put it on a t-shirt.
All right. There we go.
I love it.
Appreciate it. Super chat. Milton fan is he's been disagreeing with the assessment on Drew Pine and saying the issue is Tommy Reese and the garbage recruiting and development. Thoughts here? We'll go to Tim first.
Yeah, I mean, where are the RPOs? They threw a handful last week. You got to remember, each and every single game is a different game unto itself. So they probably didn't need them against Syracuse. Syracuse got better DBs than some of those other guys and whatnot, and they run the 3-3 stack. Three safeties were deep a bunch, dropping and fitting in there where they're like, we're just going to smash the ball against the 3-3. And that's what they did. As far as, you know, some of the calls from Cal, UNC, UNC's DBs played 10 yards off, so you could do whatever the heck you wanted. They didn't have any clue to motions. That's why Logan Diggs was catching wheel routes uncovered. So completely different game. Once again, every week's a new week. And as far as garbage recruiting development, you know what, I'm going to say probably another unpopular opinion, but, you know, what 25-year-old assistant football coach out there is going to have carte blanche do anything he wanted? So if people really thought Tommy Reese had could do whatever the heck he wanted when he's 25 years old under Brian Kelly, then go for it. It fits your narrative. I don't think it was. Is it development, recruiting? Once again, as I said 40 minutes ago here, I'm looking at Reese moving forward. If he's going to be here next year, if he goes pro, whatever it is. If Reese is here next year, I'm looking at him moving forward because I'm going to judge him on recruiting, on what he does with Freeman, not Brian Kelly. Because what elite five-star national-ranked quarterback wants to come play for Brian Kelly? It's like, be honest, people. Be honest. Was Justin Fields, Lawrence, you name them. I mean, do those guys want to come play at Notre Dame for Brian Kelly? That's the way I look at it. They got the quarterbacks they did. Buckner was national top 100. Phil Jurkovic was a national top 100 quarterback. They got him. They got a couple in, and around him, they did not.
I think, Tim, you bring up some good points, and I think it's a fair question, and that's what makes this fun, is the opinion. I think, like, RPO – okay, so you saw more IPO with Tyler because Tyler can physically do it. He presents a threat. That being said, we did RPO with Cone last year, which was strange because there's no real threat for Cone to pull it down and take off. I don't know what you really do with Drew. I mean, there was a lot of Tyler was great at the quick game. You know, he can get that ball out. I don't think Drew can do that. I don't think that Drew can sit out there. I was watching the Rams game earlier. I mean, Matt Stafford made a throw getting hit in the face. Like, Drew don't have talent like that, arm talent. We go back to Tyler's very first play of this season. He gets hit in the mouth and completes a pass to Lorenzo Styles. Drew can't do that. So Coach Reese is limited in terms of what he can do offensively at that quarterback position. I don't think he can run those quick bubble screens like the way you'd want with Drew at quarterback. You know, Reese as a recruiter, I think that influence matters is kind of what you're saying, Tim. That's the way I heard you. That's what I heard you say, is that Kelly's influence on Reese as a recruiter. Now maybe take a look and see what Reese's standard and what his influence does for Coach Reese as a recruiter. That'll be interesting to see. I've dealt with Coach Reese as a recruiter with that tight end that I worked with. Mm-hmm. And there was a little bit of arrogance there. So you're saying, what kind of a 25-year-old kid, 27-year-old kid? It's like, well, there's a little bit of arrogance in terms of his willingness to go get this kid. It was almost like you were, you're talking to a curmudgeonly old coach versus talking to a young man. So that was an interesting take.
Does that stem from his influence of Brian Kelly?
I would agree. Yeah.
His dad's been in the NFL and, big time football for, 40 years, whatever it is. So you have two big time influences on him. And as you know, influences tend to rub off on you, kind of like Freeman is with Coach Jim Tressel a little bit, when you look at it from there.
But can a tiger change its stripes, Tim? So if
we're
he's
find
if
that, out, aren't we?
Maybe he ends up down there at LSU. Who knows? Speaking of tigers, if that's his core DNA, if that's Reese's core DNA, is that sort of, for lack of a better word, arrogance that he maybe inherited from his father and his background and Coach Kelly with the way that he approached recruits. I don't know if there's going to be room for that on Freeman's staff in terms of the energy that he's bringing to the recruiting trail. Go ahead, Tim.
No, I was going to say, Singer could talk about this, but, and this is why I'm using the Reese with Freeman analogy. I don't care what he did, a couple of years ago, whatnot. The first thing, as soon as Freeman gets aboard, what does he do? He goes out and sees Tobias Merriweather, correct? He goes out and gets him. He goes out and gets Billy Schrauf. He went out and got kind of laid, the foundation of trying to get those guys, close that guy. It was Tommy Reese who got Billy away from Wisconsin, the big offensive guard. When Mike writes an article with the skill guys, at least, Reese is always involved. You always kind of see his name communicating with people of that nature. And even Tommy has talked about the influence Marcus Freeman has when Marcus got hired. It's like, well, all of a sudden us in the offensive room, this guy over here on the, as the new DC is cranking out phone calls and working his tail off. We got to up our game. Tommy talked about that a year ago. So I think we see that with this 2023 class, how this coaching staff and these guys are working under Marcus Freeman way differently than Brian Kelly.
Well, save for a quarterback though.
Which is the biggest question in the world. So,
and that's Tim. We're talking about what we're talking about.
True.
We're talking about quarterbacks.
Okay. But once again, I'm a coach. I've been a college football fan my whole life and whatnot. I am a firm believer the college head football coach matters. It matters.
Hot take.
It matters. Look at all these great head coaches with great quarterbacks. It matters. The college football coach is the biggest influence. I feel with when you're going to some of these elite dudes, that's the way I look at it. When Notre Dame's gotten major, major dudes over the years, head coach has been involved, head coach, they want to play for that head coach, winning, whatever. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
You could talk about Billy Schrauf as an elite interior offensive lineman, and you talk about going after a five-star kid that's been groomed since he's 9 years old to be a first-round pick in the NFL. The approach to recruiting those two individuals is in their teams around them, their people, their family, whomever, is completely different. But we can move on.
Sure. I agree.
There's a little argument going on our YouTube show, and it's not me. This is refreshing. Go ahead, boy.
No, it's nice because Goolsby, Mike brings up an amazing point where as good as the 2023 class is, they don't have anyone that could rush the quarterback, and they don't have anyone to throw the ball. So the quarterback recruiting in 2023 is the biggest, most shocking thing under Marcus Freeman's tenure, Tommy Rees is the OC. It's puzzling. I mean, we could sit here and talk for an hour with Mike Singer on quarterback recruiting. It's like, what the heck happened?
Well, you would think if you had a board,
which they did,
and they've got a board. So if Dante Moore was our 1AA plus,
yes,
right, and there was the other kid, there was another kid,
the Clemson kid, the Oklahoma kid, those were the big three.
So why don't we have an A, B, and a C? You know, so it's like A is your five-star Dante Moore, B is maybe a Midwestern kid with nice size, nice measurables, or what have you, and then C is like a Josh Allen. Man, this kid's got a hose for an arm, but he plays rural ball in Georgia, and he's going to take time to develop. But man, we love those physical traits.
Yeah,
you know, like Nebraska. I live here in Omaha, Nebraska. I look at the Huskers roster; they've got four or five quarterbacks on their roster. And a couple of those dudes are like, one kid's a ridiculous athlete, developmental guy. One kid's got a huge arm. And, you know, there's degrees of it where it's like we went all in on one kid. And I don't think that's good business. But
I agree.
Right, go ahead.
Singer's talked about this before. You know, we talked ad nauseum about this in February, March, April. It feels like on the whole Dante Moore thing, but. I mean, Singer probably doesn't want to say too much, but who knows? But, you know, as he's written about it, is what in the world? I mean, did they just, from what I've read from other, you know, out there podcasts, you know, and things of that nature, where it really just seems like they went all in and that's what happened. It seemed like, you know, as Mike Singer hates more than anyone on the face of the earth, the silent commitment. But do you take that? Do you trust that? Going back to your point, Goolsby, is when Dante Moore, this is my take, when he left Notre Dame that day without committing and told Freeman and that whole staff, Rees and all the guys, I'm going to go take some more visits, those guys should have just been beaten down the door 35 seconds after Moore left with his father that day, and they didn't. They didn't. And they let it float around too long, and
well, they got played. They got played. Exactly. They got played. So there's no contingency plan whatsoever. And again, we're not saying, and let's not turn this into the Dante Moore thing. God bless the kid. But like, if he's your 1A and there's three kids that we put, you know, categorically are those 1A type five-star, can't miss future NFL guys. Okay, Dante, out of respect for you and your situation and whatever, we're not going to recruit any of those kids, but we have to at least get that, you know, that Midwestern kid that's a plan B type kid who's maybe not a five-star, but he's taller than 5'9", you know, can throw the ball 45 yards. Plus, we're going to go after these kids, Dante, and we're just going to keep an open line of communication. Oh, and there's this other kid from, you know, Colorado that's 6'6", he's got an absolute hose for an arm, and we're gonna look at him. You obviously know, Dante, you're the guy that we want, but also we got to run a business here. You got played. Mike, what else we got going on? We can't keep talking about Singer anymore.
No, sorry, Tim. You're muted, my friend. We got to move along. Love you, Tim, but we got to go. Rick Palmer says, could you see a defensive coordinator using the scan offense we use against us? So basically, Notre Dame has the check with me, and then the defense moves to basically offset whatever Notre Dame is changing to. What do you think? What do you think, Mike?
Yeah. Yeah, I absolutely do. And I think so. We check, they check, or they come out in a dummy look, make us check, and then they go back into what they were playing. So there's absolutely a level of games. Yeah, there's an absolutely gamesmanship to that. You know, luckily, who did Clemson play? Did Clemson have a bye this week, Mike?
Yeah, had a bye.
That worries the hell out of me because you got a whole week to break down X number of, you know, check with me's or scans. It's like you're stealing signals in baseball. That worries me. But yeah, that's absolutely a possibility. They check, we check, they check, or they come out in some dummy look that makes us check to this, and then we go back to whatever we're going to play on defense, we being the other team.
Tim?
Yeah, I could completely agree. It's a chess game. It's a chess game. But If you start adjusting too late, as we saw North Carolina trying to do, dudes are going to be open, uncovered. And that's, you know, for me, at least when I watch you, you haven't seen a ton of adjusting and whatnot from defenses, at least watching the TV copy, obviously, trying to see guys adjust and change things. You can't, because it does go fast. That's one thing Pine has done, is when they do the scan and, you know, the, and they get an audible, man, he's snapping that ball, you know, less than 10 seconds after he makes an adjustment. Boom, the ball's being snapped really, really quick.
Okay. Yeah, but it's not Peyton Manning versus Ray Lewis and Ed Reed. It's not the back and forth. This is college. Yeah, this is Syracuse Notre Dame, right? Anyway.
Yeah, UNLV, right. Yeah, last week, exactly.
All right, another super chat here. SJ says, thoughts on the starting quarterback next year? Good transfer QBs won't come to Notre Dame unless they are guaranteed to start. I think your statement there is debatable, but we'll go to Goolsby on the thoughts on starting quarterback next year.
Yeah, it's a little bit of hyperbole there. There's no guarantees in anything. And if that's what it took to get X kid to the school, we don't want him in the first place. I like Buckner, man. I do. I really do. I think that you got to see what a game and a half of a sample size with a leaky offensive line and a shitbag group of wide receivers that were unproven. And he starts at the Horseshoe on the road, primetime night game. I'm telling you, I just think I'm just a big Tyler Buckner fan. And he's the most exciting quarterback that in a long time for me personally. So, yeah, Tyler's our starter next year, unquestionably. He was our starter this year.
Do you bring in a transfer? Would you want to bring in a transfer to bolster the room like a grad one-year rental?
I would think for depth purposes, you almost have to. And then, like, never, like, let me put this thought together. So, like, a Josh McCown, who's been in the NFL for 18, 20 years at whatever, Chase Daniels, like, you have him in that room not to be a starter. So it's like, why couldn't you get some senior guy like a Jack Cohn that understands the game or whatever? And it's like, dude, you're going to come in here, you're going to get a grad degree from Notre Dame, and you're here to sort of mentor and mold and be another coach in that room for Tyler Buckner. Not every single transfer quarterback is going to need to start and try and make it to the NFL. Does that make sense?
Just don't know who wants to do that. I don't know.
I would assume there's guys out there to be like, yeah, I'd love to get a graduate degree, tap into that Notre Dame network, and maybe a guy that wants to get into coaching. I don't know, but just we need to stop thinking about every single transfer needs to come in and be a bona fide starter. Maybe they could be there as a depth slash support role.
Yeah. I don't know why so many other schools can get quarterbacks that come in and then they don't start. Like, it doesn't need to be a guaranteed starting situation. It happens at other schools. Why not Notre Dame? Yeah, Tim?
No, I agree. I mean, they definitely need a quarterback. They definitely have to go get a transfer. If that's a Jack Cohn with Rose Bowl game experience, who's coming in to be, you know, and he earns the starting spot, great. If they get a Jack Cohn part two who comes in and Buckner beats him out, great. They definitely need one because, you know, the elephant in the room is Tyler Buckner staying healthy. If Buckner could stay healthy, he could run, he could throw, he could do some things. I truly believe that. When I went back and watched the games, he threw some beautiful throws. He could run like crazy. If you drop eight, as we talked earlier, drop eight against him, he's going to just scramble. You can't do – there's certain things you can't do against, you know, Buckner that you do all day against Pine. So you have to respect the run game. You have to. So
two more thoughts. I love Tyler being up there in the coach's booth. What an interesting like added phase to his development that other quarterbacks will never get to, you know, and I'll say enjoy. He's hurt, but I wonder what that's doing for his overall maturation process, being in a room with Tommy during a game. And then the second note that I wanted to say, if we do in fact get a transfer quarterback, please let it be somebody that has like a tangible, deliverable trait. Cause even thinking about Cohn, it was like, oh, he's unshakable and he's such a leader and whatever. And it was like, there was no great athlete, no arm strength. It was all about his intangible. So whoever maybe it's somebody in Notre Dame's media department that's putting out this crap, but like, give me somebody that's got an arm, you know, and like that's why he's going to maybe be a starting quarterback for Notre Dame, not he's a quiet leader, this or that, right? Let's just find somebody that's got some physical tools, because Tyler does.
Kind of like the Syracuse backup who was a Florida signee. I mean, that guy, I mean, that's an SEC quarterback, obviously.
He was electric. Yeah, he was an electric little player out there.
Yes, yes.
Okay, all right, another super chat here from Dan. Wrong screen. There we go. He says, watching Pine throw is like, oh, geez. Okay. Ken Angeli. So Dan's super chat here is the, just the general thought of why not throw Angeli in there. And I think this kind of goes back to part of the receiver discussion. It's always the shiny toy you don't know about, right? Is the grass green on the other side? I feel like a lot of people calling for Angeli don't really know anything about him. You know, I think he was a three of the four websites had him ranked as a 3-star. Like, I mean, Pine was a much more decorated recruit coming out of high school than Angeli, which, you know, is just a part of this discussion. But I don't know. Is anyone here calling for Angeli to take over the job right now? We'll go to Mike first.
Yeah.
Tim, you can go.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. My take's pretty easy. If Steve Angeli was as good as some people think he was, I think he would have played the rest of the game against UNLV. What a perfect opportunity. Pine gets knocked out. Angeli comes in. You know, Evans, you know, scores. And then Steve comes in the next two plays and hands off. If Angeli's a legitimate Notre Dame quarterback, what a perfect time to get a freshman in there. I mean, seriously, had he been a guy they got, you know, I'm not comparing him to Klubnik against Clemson, but they got him in. They let him throw the ball a little bit, only 4 times against Syracuse. But if Angeli is a legitimate quarterback, they would have just said, Pine, go take it easy. It's Angeli time. And it wasn't. And for me, as a coach, as a dude who's watched a lot of football, I think that told me more about Angeli than not.
I'm just being really honest.
Because if Angeli started up at practice, Pine gets knocked out, and Angeli finished the game, you're the dude, let's make a change, he's our hot freshman. That did not happen whatsoever.
Mike, why do you hate the take? Why do you hate Tim's take?
So you think that he should have got you think that we're learning a lot about this situation based on him not getting a lot of garbage time?
Steven Jelly's been getting first team reps since with the Cal game. He's been with the varsity before the Marshall game. Obviously, Ohio State Marshall. He was down on the scout team. They even said he never got any first team reps. Cal week comes, he is the bona fide backup. So he's been repping now for what, 5-6 games, whatever it's been. Lose track here after Marshall. So he's been getting first team reps each and every single week in practice. He's getting first team reps.
So Tim, so you're saying I'm trying to help you out. So you're saying that if Angeli was the guy, he should be prepared enough by now.
No. If he was the guy and the coaches know he's the guy, he would have played that UNLV game when Pine gets cold cocked and knocked out.
Okay. I missed the part where you said where he got knocked out. But
where he got knocked out. If he's the guy in practice and he's tearing it up in practice and Reese and Freeman are like, man, Angeli's going to be a dude. It's UNLV for crying out loud. Pine gets knocked out. Pine comes back in the game because my humble opinion, they know what they have with Steve Angeli and they weren't going to finish that game with him.
Pine was fine to play.
Which then Pine's that much better than Steve Angeli? Then that's even a worse thing.
No, he just didn't get hurt. And he goes and plays. If you don't get hurt, you continue playing. I don't know. It's just to make that move create so much. Tim, you're the coach. Goolsby, the former player. You guys tell me if I'm wrong. You make that kind of quarterback change. Are you splitting a locker room? I don't know.
I've made that decision like that sometimes. And it, boom, took us to a league championship. So I've made that decision where you're like, okay, the older guy gets hurt. Let's go with the young guy. We know he's better. We know the young guy's better. The young guy's going to do more for us.
Nick Saban did it in a goddamn national championship game.
Exactly, with Tua. Exactly.
You know? So let me chime in.
It's a big risk. It's a big risk. It's a big payoff.
What risk? He's the better if Angeli's the better football player, what's the risk? That he starts the rest of the year as a true freshman, like
well, listen, Matt Lovecchio listen, did listen. In 2000? Linda, listen. So here's the thing. We talked about influence earlier. We talked about, hey, I don't know who makes that call. Is that Freeman's call? Is that Reese's call? Is it a mutual decision? I don't know. But I believe that Coach Kelly's influence on Reese is like that of safety. It's of low floor versus high ceiling, right? So he's going to, okay, risk reward. Angeli might throw a pick. He, you know, maybe he understands 30, 40% of the offense. So like risk reward, let's just roll with Drew if he's not really hurt. Right. And then you're saying, okay, I'm critiquing Tommy's ability to assess quarterbacks and assess the skill positions. So it's like, what is Coach Reese's? Somebody asked questions of these guys at the stupid press conferences, but like, what are your tiers of things? How do you stack rank what's most important at your quarterback position? Because based off of what we hear through the media, it's confidence, it's stoicism, it's moxie. You know, a level-headedness, it's moxie, it's nothing. So it's like, it's nothing tangible. So if Coach Reese is assessing a quarterback's ability to play based off of practice, he executes the things, he does all the checks. If that's what he ranks as most important, then he's going to roll with Pine. If he puts physical ability, arm talent, et cetera, at lower down the rank, Angeli's not going to move up. Does that make sense? So it's like, what are you what criteria are you using to assess your quarterback's readiness and ability to play? Hopefully that makes sense. Thirdly, Angeli wasn't ready to go in the game. He wasn't even taking snaps, Tim. Like, it wasn't like they had a contingency plan built in. He was like, oh, what's going on? Should I be doing something? Like, you know, he's a backwards hat guy, by the way, Mike Angeli. He wasn't ready to go in the game.
But he was the next series. He was the next series, and they handed off twice, and they took him out.
So the last thought that I had, and I've been saying that Angeli's not ready just because it's big-time college football, although I think they did kind of run a pro system out there, Bergen Catholic. I'm going to assume they're well-coached out there. But it did cross my mind for the first time watching this game, like, bro, if this is all we're going to do, put Angeli in.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're going to run the ball 45 times a game, put Angeli in, because I want to believe – and I haven't seen him throw the ball, but I want to believe that he can push it to Tobias or to you name it. You know, Lindsey. I want to believe that he has a bigger arm than what Drew Pine does. So that's what I would look at it like, upside versus safety. I think all those things have to be taken into consideration, but I think maybe Coach Reese's puts more stock in intangible things than physical gifts.
Crickets. All right.
All right, moving on.
If no one has anything to say, I mean, this is a shock. We're caught up on super chats. I will say on Angeli, the young man can do no wrong. I love him.
But also, we were texting the three of us earlier.
I'm nervous.
I mean, Pine's taking some shots. Tim.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yes. One of us said, I'm surprised he didn't get a concussion. I think I
that
said.
That was me.
Maybe he did. Maybe he does. I mean, it was oof.
So
he was a matter of inches between. Go ahead, Tim.
I was going to say, then that goes back to my point. When you got a young freshman and he's good and you're liking what you see, if you like what you see in practice and you have a smidge of an opportunity to get that dude on the field, you're going to get him on the field. They haven't done that. And Pine has
got. Tim, let me stop you. So when you said, if you like what you see on the film at practice as a coach,
yeah,
what's more important, physical ability, you know, ability to whip the ball, he can actually throw it, or checks and reads, what's more important?
If for Reese, what's more important is get the damn football to the guy. What quarterback could get the ball to the guy with consistency? That's not over the head. That's not all over the place. That's not a bounce pass on a freaking screen that's going to run for a touchdown. That's the thing. So is Angeli not getting the ball to these guys at practice? That's what's crossed my mind the last 2 weeks. I mean, Pine got crushed on that drop eight where he scrambles. He's holding the ball for 12 seconds. Joe Alt can't pass pro forever. The guy runs around and just knocks the heck out of Pine from behind. And it's like, dude.
He is always rolling out to his left, too. He always goes to his left.
It's like, you know, which, by the way, I really hope that sack does not count against Joe Alt, because that is not his fault whatsoever. I don't know how those stupid sack things work.
So you just answered the question, Tim. You think that physical, you would probably put physical ability, like the actual, he has a mechanism to actually physically get the ball there. That trumps checks and experience, et cetera.
That he's a freshman. Mike, you played with Matt Luvicki.
Tim, you should run for politics. You just never answer a question. Answer the question. Run for an office or answer the question. Do you put physical ability or experience, playbook? What's more important to you if you're making what's that call?
3 weeks. Hold on. 3 weeks in a row, Pine's under 50%. He's under 50% 3 weeks in a row. This is who he is now moving forward, you know, from what it sounds like. So why not get Angeli in if he's doing the things necessary in practice? That's, I think, the most frustrating
thing. What are those things? That's what I'm trying to drill down to.
Completing the darn ball.
Okay.
Hitting a wide open post.
Yeah.
You know, those things. You know, getting the ball out to receivers. Hitting Tobias on a post. Like you're saying, don't underthrow it to the poor guy.
It's pitch and catch. A lot of this stuff is just pitch and catch.
So much.
So, you know, the last thing, just to be fair to Steve Angeli, let's not pretend that we've got, you know, the next Trevor Lawrence on the bench.
No.
Is that fair to say, gentlemen? So it's like maybe Steve's arm isn't markedly better than Drew Pine's arm. So we're going to take the conservative approach and go with somebody that knows the playbook, knows the checks or whatever. But furthermore, though, boy, are we making an argument to put Angeli in the game, because if we're going to do this scan bullshit, then why not put Angeli in? You don't have to do anything. Coach is going to tell him what to run.
No.
And all he's got to go out there and do it. But we might not have a choice. I mean, if Drew keeps taking these hits and he's built like a child, so when a 280-pound kid hits him, it looks like he's getting hit by a train. You know, he's 190 pounds at this point in the season.
I love it. Beat Clemson, right?
Man, Drew Pine's good for the podcast, though. There's no two ways about it.
That's why I want to see Angeli come in and go 12 for 28 so we could change the subject, right?
Oh, gosh. Good times.
So, Goolsby, before we head off, you're picking Clemson or ND to be Clemson, right? And you're going to be there.
I'll be at the game. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. I'll be at the game. And if anybody, like, because I'll be there, I'm taking a customer to the game. But if anybody sees me, like, say what up if you see me at a tailgate or whatever. Say hello. But yeah, I think that, you know, it would, for us to beat Clemson, it would just, it's so Notre Dame 2022. It just fits. I think the night game, there was the only other note that I had that I wanted to talk about. I think the night game environment, we had a fun win, a physical win. I could just see it happening. And I think that Clemson's a little bit overrated. They're not the Clemson of old in terms of, like, they don't have a dominant quarterback. He's a little hot and cold. They've got a little bit of turmoil in their quarterback room. But yeah, I think we can win. I think we will win. And then the only other thing that we didn't touch on here, and it's a little bit of a hot button issue, and I've said it, Mike, as long as you've known me, I've sort of griped about the Notre Dame day game experience at Notre Dame Stadium. And there's a lot left to be desired. And that hurts fans' feelings. But as somebody that's played in, you know, a lot of big-time stadiums, it's real. And you can – it's gotten to a point, for folks, where you can see where the way the Notre Dame team plays at noon or whatever on a Saturday in South Bend and the way that we play in a dome in, you know, northern New York up there in Syracuse, it's palpable. It's real. So I think that fans – should do something. Like, if you're going to the game, do a little soul searching and be like, you have to understand that taking in the campus, going to the grotto, doing all of it, man, it's incredible. It's beautiful. I think it's something that every college football fan should do. But the crescendo of the day is the freaking game.
You know what I'm saying? So get up for the game for the sake of the kids playing, because they need it, and you could see it. It's like, it's almost sad in a way that we play so much better on the road. And I think that the kids are culpable, obviously. The coaches are culpable to a degree, but I think that fans should take some ownership of that, those outcomes and the way the team plays as well, or take pride in it, however they want to look at it.
My computer just froze and I'm back. Okay. So are we still live?
Oh. We didn't miss you. You know what?
Catch passes, catch the deep balls against Marshall and Stanford, and there's not a home field issue. I mean,
fair enough. Well, you don't agree. Yeah. Well, I would disagree in terms of like the.
I'm not saying it's wild and crazy, but I'm just saying.
The level of energy in terms of the way these kids play on the road versus the way they do at home, it's noticeable.
That's why I picked Notre Dame to beat Syracuse. You know who didn't?
I didn't. I know that.
All my coworkers.
I did. It was a motivational tool.
Notre Dame won because of that 9-for-19. I mean, that's really what it was.
I'll be honest. I was, watching the game. I did not think they were going to just smash the living heck out of Syracuse like that. That was wild. But you know what? It always helps when your starting quarterback is injured. So Syracuse definitely had an injured QB.
Yeah, and it helps when the opposing nose tackle is 260.
Yes, right? yes. Which, by the way, hey, you mentioned
their nose tackle was the Drew. Their nose tackle was like the Drew Pine of nose tackles. You know.
Oh man, hey, big win on the road. Which, by the way, Goolsby, you did talk about Notre Dame coming off a big win night game. Wasn't that BYU Stanford? So we'll see if Syracuse Clemson hopefully is a little different.
I'm feeling good about it.
The Clemson. This is going to be a monster game. I know everyone keeps saying Clemson's down. I'm a huge Dabo fan. They're 8-0, probably the best D-line in the country, and a tailback who's a dude. It's going to be a heck of a football game.
All right.
Wrapping it up, Mike.
We're done. We are done. How about that? Just a cool hour and a half.
90 minutes. Yeah, that was a good chat.
Yeah. Appreciate everybody for joining. Goolsby, any final thoughts?
Smash that like button.
Smash the like button. Tim, appreciate you joining your first Mike Goolsby show.
You got it.
Yeah, folks, smash the like button. blueandgold.com. Of course, subscribe to our YouTube channel. Pulling for Browns +3.5 tonight. That's what Singer needs. Or not needs, because I don't gamble, but appreciate you guys. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll catch you next time.